Hi, this is Chaz from the Road Gunner Podcast, also known as the Unnamed Trucker. When I want to listen to a show with practical information from an everyday guy who can't carry a cop just like me, I listen to my good friend Bob Main. Now on with the show. Take it away, Bob.
Welcome to episode number 366 of the Handgun World Podcast, a practical show done by a practical everyday guy. That is me. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop, and I'm Bob Main, your host. I want to talk about some emails this week. I have a couple of emails to address, and then I've also got just a subject that's kind of come to mind and some observations I've made lately about gun laws. And normally I don't really discuss most of the emails I get because there's just too many. Normally I ask you to call into my voicemail and do it that way because there's usually not as many of those. But I have received some really interesting emails recently that I got to talk about these. I just do. So thank you very much to all of you who have sent these in. And if you want to actually send me a voicemail, that number is 210-646-1727. So if you want to call into the Handgun World Podcast, 210-646-1727. Okay, I got an email recently, and here's what the listener said. Said they were gifted a handgun and several rifles and a safe last year. Wow, isn't that cool? How about that? Gifted a handgun and several rifles and a safe. Yeah, I wish I could fall into that kind of a gift. Says that my wife insists that they stay put in the garage. At the beginning of the year, I purchased my first handgun, a SIG P320, and have been putting rounds through it and working on accuracy, and also went as far as to purchase a lifetime training membership at a facility in Nevada. I think I know where that is, but the emailer doesn't say. Anyway, when I told my wife that I was going to use my new gun for training personal defense, she insisted that I get an outside opinion. So I guess probably this listener is emailing me for an outside opinion, so here goes. I'm going to go ahead and give the outside opinion. Whether this listener chooses to let the wife listen to it or not, I'm going to do the best I can to tactfully and nicely talk about my opinions on these two subjects. One, she says that because I'm a heavy sleeper, that it's unsafe for me to keep a loaded gun near my side of the bed. Let me think about that one here. She thinks that because we have a security alarm in the house, that it's unnecessary for me to keep loaded weapons stashed around the house because the police will come to help us in case of an emergency. All right, let me talk about that. Boy, I've got some credibility on this one because for a total of 18 years, I was in the home security alarm business. I worked for a service provider in home security alarms, and I worked for a manufacturer of home security alarms. I have a home security alarm, and I have a monitored home security alarm. I have set off my home security alarm on purpose before, and I've also set it off by accident. So let me explain this to your wife. Here's how this works. Home security alarms are rarely ever tied in directly to the police department. They are monitored by a monitoring service, by a third-party monitoring service. That monitoring service will usually call your house, or if you have a technology called two-way voice, they'll speak to you through the alarm. So either they'll speak to you through your alarm system or they'll call your home. Okay, this is before they even call the police. So, you know, it takes 20 or 30 seconds for the signal to go through to the monitoring center, and then the monitoring center calls you and tries to speak with you. So maybe that takes another 15 or 20 seconds. Let's say 10. So now we're up to about, I would say, 35 or 40 seconds minimum once your alarm goes off. 35 to 40 seconds minimum before they either talk to you using two-way voice, or they try to call you. Then here's what happens. After they determine that it's a real emergency, then they're going to dispatch the police. The reason why an alarm company does this is to cut back on false alarms, folks. False alarms are a big problem. So they do this to cut back on false alarms. So by the time that the alarm monitoring service calls the police, you can probably say it's going to be 45 seconds to 60 seconds minimum just for them to call the police. Now, if you go back and listen to some of my older episodes, it wasn't too long ago. It was 3 or 4 months ago. I think it was when I entitled it Because I Can't Carry a Cop. And I talked about some actual cases on how long it took for the police to arrive. And I think the average was somewhere around 3 to 4 minutes. And that's on a good day. I guess on a good day, it takes 3 to 4 minutes. Maybe if you're extremely lucky, it might take a couple minutes. So if you add the 2 minutes to the 1 minute that it takes for the alarm company to do their thing, and again, I'm being very generous to the alarm companies, because some of the monitored alarm companies, if you don't have a good one, they take even longer. You're talking 3, 4, maybe 5 minutes. I've heard in some cases 8 to 10 minutes before the police get there. Do you realize how much damage can be done by the time the alarm goes off and the police actually show up at your door? It's been over, the whole incident's been over for a long time, folks. So tell your wife, the incident is long over by the time the police get there. And I know that I'm not just saying this and getting it from nowhere. I'm saying it from experience. Okay? I'm saying this from experience. I know how home alarm systems work. Any of them. I don't care. And by the way, one of my favorite alarm systems, if you've been wondering lately, I really like SimpliSafe.com. SimpliSafe. S-I-M-P-L-I. SimpliSafe. It's all wireless, and I don't work for them. I don't represent them. They're not a sponsor. Nothing. I just like them. But still, it's monitored by a monitoring service, and it's still going to probably take that at least 30 to 60, maybe even 90 seconds before they even call the police. So even if you're a heavy sleeper, let me tell you what. If you're a heavy sleeper, any alarm is going to wake you up. Any decent alarm system is going to wake you up. I don't know how people can sleep through the siren. Most of them are about 100 decibels, maybe slightly less, but that's a lot. That's loud. I don't know how people can sleep through that. I don't care how heavy of a sleeper you are. I used to be a heavy sleeper, too. And every single time that the alarm got set off by accident in the middle of the night, and it was always by accident, you know, somebody getting up to open up a door and forgetting that the alarm was on. One time we had a motion detector armed and positioned wrong, and our dog kept setting it off. That thing woke me up, and I was about as heavy of a sleeper as anybody. So what you can say is, you know, if you want to wait all that time for the police to get there, that's your choice. It's your prerogative. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. Who am I, right? Yeah, I'm just an everyday dude talking about guns on this podcast here, and it's my passion and it's my hobby, and that's all I am. But I am an experienced home security person in a former life. I don't do that anymore. For the last 5 years, I've been doing security mainly. I sell security products for hotels, not private homes. But I was in the private home security business for somewhere between 17 and 18 years, if I calculate that correctly. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, you know, it's just like calling 911, really. In fact, an alarm might even be slower than calling 911. You know what an alarm really is? You know what a home security alarm really is? It's a deterrent. That's all it is. It's a deterrent. You know, if you got the signs and the stickers on your windows in the front yard, it tells the intruder that you have an alarm system. That's part of the deterrent. If they do bust in anyway, if they decide to challenge your house and enter your house even though you have an alarm system, and that siren starts going off, if they decide to challenge that, you got a pretty serious intruder that is about to do you and your family harm. Because I'll tell you some more statistics. Statistics show that a home that has an alarm system, once that intruder hears that siren, 90% of those intruders, they take off. They're gone. They're gone. A lot of times, once they see the stickers and the yard sign, they're gone. I always encourage people, please put up the stickers and the yard signs. Put up the stickers and the yard signs. That's your first level of protection, folks. That's your first deterrent. People say, I don't want anybody to know that I have an alarm. Why not? How come you don't want someone to know that you have an alarm system? That's part of the deterrent. That's part of what it's for. But if they do decide to challenge that, if they do decide, if they're that hardened of a criminal, I say to this listener who emailed me, ask your wife a question. If they're that serious and they're that hardened of a criminal, why would you even want them spending 10 seconds in your house without you using some kind of resistance? I'd like to spend some time here on this segment talking about open carry, and specifically not whether you should or should not open carry, but I want to talk about something that I have observed here in the great state of Texas where I live that other people might want to think about. In other words, how you persuade your legislators and what you tell your legislators and what you try to get them to do. I think there's a lesson to be learned in what I'm about to say. Most of you know that Texas was one of the very few states for a long time that did not have open carry. Well, Texas Open Carry was one of the organizations, and there were others that pushed for it. For years and years and years and years, pushed to have open carry legal in the state of Texas. And on January 1st, 2016, open carry of handguns became legal in the state of Texas. Open carry of long guns was always legal in the state of Texas, or at least for a very long time. I don't know if you had actually known that or not. So, a lot of people were really, really pushing very, very hard for open carry, and they finally got it January 1st, 2016. They were also pushing for campus carry, and campus carry is going to be legal, I think, September 1st of this year, 2016. But back to open carry. Here's what I want to say about it. Here we are, let's see, the date that I'm recording this segment's May 10th. So here we are just a little over 4 months of open carry being legal in the state of Texas. And you know, folks, it's almost like we don't have open carry. Really. I mean, what Texas has allowed is they've allowed signs to carry the force of law. And this is really something that I think that it doesn't get talked much about. But I think that we really need to pay attention to this. Signs that carry the weight of law. In other words, a legal sign. In other words, a property owner can post his or her business with a .30-06 sign which bans concealed carry or a .30-07 sign which bans open carry. So since the open carry law took place, you know, businesses have been freaking out for no reason as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's silly. It's a ridiculous thing for them to freak out about, but nonetheless, all these 30-07 signs are going up, and I see them everywhere. Now, maybe I'm exaggerating this. I hope not. I mean, I hope I am exaggerating. Maybe I'm not, but everywhere there are 30-07 signs banning open carry. That means that those signs have the force of law or the weight of law, and it's illegal if you open carry wherever they post the proper sign in Texas. So, you know, it's almost like we don't have it because there are so many places that have the sign, so many places where you cannot open carry. you can't hardly go about doing a bunch of errands without running into some place that has a 30-07 sign. And so, you know, what are we supposed to do? You know, open and then conceal and then open and then conceal. You know, if you leave your house open carrying and the first place you go to has a 30-07 sign, then you got to conceal it. And then the next place you go to, it, they might not have the sign. Then the next place you go to, they will have the sign. And so on and so forth. And so, you know, if you have five stops planned that day, which a lot of us do, right? I mean, you know, time's a precious asset, is it not? How many of you are like me? And when you leave the house, you got several things planned. You got several stops, several things to do. You're not just going to probably go one place and come back. I mean, that's rare. Yes, I do that. Sometimes I have to go to the drugstore, and that's all I do is go to the drugstore and come back. Or sometimes I got to go pick something up at the grocery store and then just come back. But a lot of times I like to conserve my trips and conserve my time and do everything all at once. And so it's kind of ridiculous because we got all these 30-07 signs. So I'm thinking to myself, I might as well just conceal. If I just conceal it, I don't have to worry about whether there's a 30-07 sign in the establishment that I want to go to. Now, here's what else has happened. The open carry law has caused a lot of businesses and a lot of establishments to think about gun carriers when they probably didn't give it much thought in the past. Right? And it never really crossed their mind much, or they didn't really care because they were concealed. You know, yes, there were some 30-06 signs that banned concealed carry, but not that many. Not that many here in Texas. Now I see more of those signs even banning concealed carry because of the open carry law that we now have. You know, so it's caused more concealed carry to be banned. As I just mentioned, businesses that didn't really give it much thought before, that really didn't seem to care too much, now all of a sudden, oh my God, we don't want to have people open carrying in here. So they put up a 30-07 sign, and then of course, well, yeah, you know what? We don't like guns. We might as well go ahead and ban concealed carry. And so they put the 30-06 sign up. Now, in the state of Texas, they have to have both signs. In other words, if there's a no open carry sign, I can legally conceal carry. If there's a no concealed carry, I can legally open carry. They do have to post both signs, which, by the way, sure makes their storefront look kind of ugly, in my opinion, you know, but yeah, that is what it is. So I really think that if I'm gonna have any kind of influence on what my state legislature does, and of course I'm only one guy. I'm only one guy. I got a pretty big mouthpiece here with this podcast, but I'm only one guy. I would like to see our legislature, our state legislature, get rid of signs that carry the force of law. Get rid of signs that carry the force of law and just write it into the statutes where you can carry and where you cannot. Now, I know some people on the other side of the fence would say, well, Bob, you know, that's not good because that would take away a property owner's right to ban carry, to ban concealed carry or to ban open carry. And that is the problem right there. That's the tough question here. Because what we've done, you know the old saying, be careful what you wish for? Well, you know, we wished for open carry and we wished for it so hard, we got it, and now be careful. Now there's unintended consequences. There's unintended consequences that are happening because now we got all these signs going up, the signs that are legal signs, and they're going up, you know, and I see them more and more. It seems like, I mean, I know I've been to places that didn't have the sign that now have the sign since January 1. So I guess what we need to do is we need to be real careful. We need to think about the unintended consequences as to what it is that we're pushing for. See, I would have much rather seen in the United States something happen like national reciprocity, rather than, you know, lots of open carry all over the place. I mean, it seemed like a lot of states were you know, wanting to have open carry. And again, don't get me wrong. Please don't send me hate mail and say that I'm against open carry. I don't like to open carry, but I think people should have the legal right to do it. And here I am right now. I'm actually complaining about the fact that too many businesses are putting up no open carry signs. So it's not like I am against open carry. I'm not. I'm actually for people having the right to open carry. But I think a more important issue is national reciprocity. If you have your concealed carry license from one state, it should be good in all 50 states, just like your driver's license, right? Ultimately, what does the United States Constitution protect? Ultimately, it protects our right to keep and bear arms. I get that. We're not there yet. We're not at constitutional or permitless carry in most places. What is there, only 6 or 7 states that have permitless carry? We're getting there, but we're not there. But even permitless carry or constitutional carry, think about it. Only that state. It's only permissible in that state where it's allowed. If we had national reciprocity, well, then with a concealed carry license, you can conceal carry in every single state. And that's better than just having constitutional carry in your state, is it not? Now, maybe I look at this differently because I travel a lot. I travel around inside my state, and of course I travel a lot around the U.S. And so, to me, that would be much more important. So let's be real careful about what it is that we're pressuring the legislators about, both federal and state. Now, I guess there would be negatives to national reciprocity as well. There would be negatives to that. Because we're probably never going to get all 50 states to agree. That's really, really tough. All 50 states to agree to give every state national or every state reciprocity. I mean, we already have some states right now that have canceled other states from their reciprocity agreements. So I think the chances of getting all 50 states to agree, you know, it's like trying to get all your congressmen or congresswomen to agree on something. That's very slim. So who's going to have to be the one to decide if we get national reciprocity? Unfortunately, it's probably going to have to be a federal entity. It's probably going to have to be Congress or the Supreme Court. And I really don't think that it's a very good idea for the federal government to be getting involved in making firearms policy. There's too much of that already. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is a loose cannon, if you ask me. Those folks are loose cannons. Yeah, I know. I probably just got in trouble with somebody for saying that, didn't I? Somebody at Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is listening to me. And, you know, if I wasn't on their list now, I'm on their list. I don't care. The Constitution protects our Second Amendment. And it tells the federal government to stay out of our Second Amendment rights. That we have them and to stay out of messing around with them. So, but how else would we achieve national reciprocity? I'd like to see it. I think it's more important than things like open carry and permitless carry, also called constitutional carry. But when I just look at what's happened here in Texas, and I take note of all the signs that have been going up, you know, it reminds me of what my grandmother always used to say: be careful of what you wish for. And that applies to a lot of things, but let's just be real careful about what we make a lot of noise about when we are fighting for our rights. We got a real big fight ahead, folks, because politically, we all know now it's coming down to Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton for president. And neither one of those are going to be very good friends of the Second Amendment. Neither one. Donald Trump can say all he wants. I don't care what he says. I look at what someone used to do. Yes, okay, he says he has a carry permit in New York. I mean, you know, he's Donald Trump and a billionaire. That's probably why they gave him a carry permit. All right. If I'm not mistaken, New York's not a shall issue state, is it? New York's a may issue state. But I don't think either one of those are very, really good, hardcore friends of the Second Amendment, regardless of what Donald Trump says. And the Supreme Court is huge, folks. Putting people on the Supreme Court, the next president's going to have the opportunity for at least one, maybe two, and maybe even three appointees to the Supreme Court. And make no mistake about it. Remember, I said it here on this podcast, on this episode. I'm going to make a prediction. As soon as the presidential election is over, and Justice Antonin Scalia gets replaced, or maybe even another Supreme Court justice getting replaced, somebody's going to bring a lawsuit that is going to challenge either all or part of the Second Amendment. And it's going to get taken up, it's going to get heard by the court, and chances are the Supreme Court is going to start whittling away at some of our Second Amendment rights. It's going to happen. It's just going to happen. You should prepare for that. You guys know I'm a big preparedness kind of guy. I'm also a prepper at heart. And you better be ready for that. You better prepare for that. If you want to buy something, buy it now. Right now. Right now while ammo's cheap. Right now while standard capacity magazines are cheap. You got a gun that you want to buy that you think may get banned later on? Buy it. Buy it. All right, don't go big time into debt, because I'm not a real big believer in lots of debt. I use debt very, very wisely. I started using credit just a little bit. I shouldn't say using debt. I use credit just a little bit, but I never use credit more than I can, if I want to, just write a check at the end of the month and pay it off. There will be some panic buying going on. It seems like it happens almost every election cycle. There's some panic. Doesn't matter who's going to get elected or who it looks like it's going to get elected or who even does get elected. There always seems to be panic buying before an election or whenever there's some kind of a major shooting that happens. There's always panic buying that goes on, especially when the pinheads in the government start to rattle the sabers about gun control and things. So buy it now. And just be careful of the unintended consequences, because there's probably something that's going to happen as a ramification whenever gun laws are changed. You know, it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when campus carry starts here. There's going to be a lot of people freaking out in colleges. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the Texas legislature put something in the law where, you know, the college can't post every single building as a no-carry building. So I really wish that that's the way it was with, you know, just generally in this state. And maybe some of you who come from other open carry states where people are doing a lot of open carrying, you know, maybe you can shed some light on this. Of course, my perspective comes from what happens here in the great gun-friendly state of Texas where I live. Now, there is an email that I want to address. So, even though this is the same segment of this show, there's an email here that I want to talk about. A couple of them, actually. This first one comes from Nick. And Nick in Michigan. Of course, I know what his last name is, but of course, I protect people's privacy. And I am not going to talk, give out last names, but Nick called to thank me for the years of hard work that I've put into this podcast and helping people on the Second Amendment. And he says he's listened to all the podcasts, and some of the information that I've put out there has changed the way that he looks and thinks about things on a lot of different levels in his life and everything. And he said that my show is a good service for people who are open to it. Here's something that Nick said in the latter part of his email. He said, in the last few years, I have started to lose interest in your show. So he's talking about himself, that he's starting to lose interest in my show because I've slowly watered down my show and always said that I would not have paid sponsors on my podcast and so forth. And so he thinks that my show is becoming nothing more than a huge commercial for the Shooters Club. And anyway, let me address that, because maybe other people have thought about something and maybe thought, you know, about my one and only sponsor, which is Concealment Solutions. Yeah, for years and years and years, I said I would not have paid sponsors on this show, or I didn't really believe in it because I didn't want my show to get too commercial. Now, understand something, folks. I just want to explain this. I have been doing this nearly 7 years. I challenge you to find anybody in any kind of radio, whether it's regular radio or internet radio or anything, any kind of radio or internet radio program. I challenge you to find one that doesn't promote anything. Everybody's got some kind of a sponsor, or they got something that they're promoting, or they work for a training academy, or they're sponsored by somebody. Everybody does. You know, folks, we have to pay the bills. People can't just keep doing what I do for free all the time. There aren't a lot of expenses in podcasting. Okay? I don't have that many expenses, but would you agree that my time is worth something? And I believe in giving value. I don't believe in just running a bunch of commercials. There are podcasts out there that, you know, the host talks for 15 minutes and then there's a commercial. And then they talk another 20 minutes and then there's another commercial. And then they talk another 20 minutes, and there's another commercial. And it's 2 or 3 hours long, and you've listened to about 10 different commercials from different sponsors that sponsor their show. Or for the first 10 minutes, they do nothing but talk about sponsors. Or for the last 10 minutes. There are a lot of podcasts like that. And not all of them are radio shows. Some of them are just regular podcasts. I don't do that. I make mention of our Shooters Club, typically for 20 seconds at the end of every show. I make mention of Concealment Solutions. You know why I believe in Jason's products so much? That I approached him and I said, hey, why don't we work out some kind of a sponsorship agreement? And it's working out pretty well. I don't spend much time talking about that. So, for Nick to say it's nothing but a big commercial for my Shooters Club, I'll tell you what, I want to challenge Nick or anybody else to do this. I've done this, so I'm going to challenge you to do it and see if you come up with the same thing. Pick any of my episodes and actually measure the amount of time I talk about my sponsors or the Shooters Club or Amazon. Measure that amount of time and tell me what percentage of my entire show that it takes up. Okay? So, Nick, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a challenge, Nick. Please do that. Why don't you pick 5 episodes? And why don't you measure the amount of time that I spend, and not including this one, because I'm making a point. I'm using this to make a point in this episode. But pick 5 other episodes. Measure the amount of time in each episode that I spend talking about the Shooters Club that both Ben Branham and I both benefit from, and Amazon and my sponsors, or even my training classes. Measure that time and tell me what is the percentage of time of the total show that I spend doing that. Okay? It's not very much. And I don't talk for 15 or 20 minutes and then run a bunch of commercials and keep doing that over and over throughout the show. All right, so that's all I want to say. Nick, I hope you keep listening. I hope you find real good value in my podcast. You know, I'm not watering it down. As a matter of fact, I'm trying to build more and more relevant content into each episode. And by the way, lately I've been rerunning some of my older episodes because, you know, I think it's important that you re-listen to things that happened in the past. And a lot of people had some really good things to say on this, on my podcast, my Handgun World podcast, over the past years. Sometimes we tend to forget that. I know I listen to a lot of other podcasts out there, and sometimes I tend to forget what they covered in older shows. And so I think it's kind of cool to be able to go back and listen to some shows. And even I enjoy it. I go back and listen to some of the interviews that I used to do with people, and I get something out of it. I get something out of it the second time that I listen to it. So I'm not going to do that too much. You know, I've put up 3 rebroadcasts in the last couple months, I believe, or the last 7 or 8 weeks. It's probably just going to be a once-a-month type of thing. All right, just a very quick break. And by the way, it's not going to be a commercial. And I'll get to the next topic. Okay, next, I have a voicemail to play for you. If you remember, Derek from Atlanta called into one of my recent shows, and I'm pretty sure it was Derek from Atlanta, and he was asking about how to make sure that, you know, even if you use your gun in self-defense, to make sure that people know you're the good guy, and to make sure that responding police officers know the good guy, you're the good guy, and so on and so forth. So, Chaz from the Road Gunner Podcast, the unnamed trucker, just sent in a really good voicemail on that. And I think it's very important for you to hear this because he adds something, as you know, that Chaz is a an instructor from Masada Youb Group, and has a lot of more background in this than I do. So here we go. Let's listen to what Chaz has to say about Derek's question.
Hi, Bob. This is Chaz. I wanted to add a couple of things to your advice that you gave to Derek in Atlanta. First of all, I think that it would behoove anybody who is serious about self-defense and wants to know the rules of engagement to take a MAG 20 Armed Citizens Rules of Engagement class with Masada Youth. I think that it's a reasonable investment of just $400 plus your time off in your hotel room and things like that. I don't personally teach it, but you can look that up at MasadaIYouthGroup.com. It is well worth the investment, and I know, Bob, that as a graduate of that class, the MAG 40, that you would probably agree with me. Also, another thing, and in my advice to Derek, who travels the lower 48 states, is to regularly check www.handgunlaw.us so that you can make sure that you're in full compliance with all of the states that you travel through if you choose to carry in those states. And also, a warning about New Jersey. New Jersey has basically outlawed all handguns for carry by anybody unless you have a New Jersey permit. They also outlaw the use of hollow point ammunition. I make it a point to avoid New Jersey at all costs. I know that's not possible for all people. The only exceptions to the no permit rule in New Jersey is if you're traveling to or from a range with your gun. Also, you can use hollow point ammunition at a range, but you're not allowed to have it outside of range environment. One last thing with New Jersey is the federal law supposedly protects you if you're traveling straight through New Jersey without making any stops to use the restroom, get coffee, get fuel, or anything like that. So don't believe me. Double check the rules at www.handgunlaw.us. I think you give some solid advice, Bob. Love listening to the show. Talk to you later.
Chaz, thanks very much, brother. Thanks for calling that in. And again, folks, if you want to call in a voicemail, 210-646-1727. That's the number, 210-646-1727. Chaz, I appreciate you adding that, because I did forget pretty much to talk about that. And so thanks for adding that in. And folks, if you don't know what he's talking about, go back and listen to some of the more recent episodes of my show, and you'll understand. Probably go back and not the rebroadcasts, but go back and listen to some of the newly recorded episodes, the last 2 or 3, and you'll get an idea. Listen to Chaz's podcast, the Road Gunner Podcast. I think you're going to like that. He's an over-the-road truck driver and does a very, very good show. I got a range report coming up for my SIG Legion pretty soon. Very, very fine gun. Very fine gun. Glad I bought it. Really like it. Yeah, I'm working on getting used to the double action, single action trigger. I am, and I don't think it's going to be, with that particular pistol, I don't think it's going to be much of a problem. You know, as you know, I'm used to shooting striker-fired guns that have a consistent trigger pull every single time, trigger press, I should say. And most of you know my favorite so far is the Glock 19. And I, you know, hey, you know, folks, I still have not found a striker-fired gun that I like better than the Glock 19. No, it's not perfect, not like they advertise Glock perfection. It's not that. But when I look at the whole package, when I look at the entire package of what you get when you buy a Glock, you get a gun that has an impeccable reliability record. Not perfect reliability, but extremely good. You get a gun that's simple. You get a gun that is, you don't have to think about how to use it. You get a gun that has tons and tons and tons of accessories available for it, and different types of sights, and different types of holsters, and extended magazine release buttons, and extended slide release levers, although I don't use the slide release lever for releasing the slide, but some people do. And the different, I think I mentioned sights, and, you know, the different things that you can do to the trigger, and the recoil springs, and the recoil spring guide rods, and it goes on and on, folks. The different things you can do to the grip, which I'm a huge fan of modifying the Glock grip. You know, a lot of people say, well, I don't get a Glock because it doesn't fit my hand. So make it fit your hand. You might, yeah, sure, you have to spend a little extra money, but, you know, I've done that to several of my Glocks. Take it to a professional that is really good at modifying the grip to your liking. I like to use Chris France at Citadel Armory here in San Antonio. And you can find his website, CitadelArmory.net. CitadelArmory.net. Chris is at the gun shows a lot. And he's just done the last two, and I think he also did one. I referred a couple of other people to him, and he's done grip jobs. He does a good job. I have him take off the finger grooves on the front of the Glock 19, and I don't have him do a grip reduction, although he can do that. I don't have him reduce the size of the grip, because the actual size of the Glock grip fits my hand very well, and I fit on my hand fits on the gun well. But I have him take off the finger grooves and then do some nice texturing for me. And the most important thing is I have him undercut the trigger guard so I can get a little bit higher grip on the gun, and it gets rid of Glock knuckle and all that kind of good stuff. So, anyway, I haven't found anything better for me than a Glock 19. Smith & Wesson M&Ps are very, very good as well. And I highly, highly recommend them. As a matter of fact, my favorite single stack 9mm is still the Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm. Although I got to say, my new Walther PPS M2 is really nice. Really nice. But anyway, I'll have a range report coming up for my SIG Legion probably in the next week or two. I'm probably going to get a lot of good audio recordings from the AR-15 M4 rifle gunfighting class. When you listen to this podcast, I'll be in day two of that class that John Payne from Suarez International is teaching. And Ben Branham and I both are going to be students. How about that? Ben and I are going to be students for a change at John's M4 AR-15 rifle gunfighting class. And I am excited about it. So this podcast is going to release on Sunday mornings like it usually does, and we will be just starting day two of that class. So next weekend you're probably going to hear audio from that class, probably with a bunch of different people, myself, Ben, John Payne, probably some students and everything, and we're going to be talking about learning to fight with our semi-automatic rifles. With all that said, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. Hey, by the way, I forgot to mention, check out my interview on the AR-15 podcast. It was quite timely since I'm taking this class now with John Payne. The AR-15 podcast. Many thanks to Reed and JD. They just recently had me on there talking about stink hit the fan AR-15s. In other words, what do you want when the chips are really, really down? And I gave them my opinions. I seem to be getting a lot of good feedback on that. So go over to the AR-15 podcast. Listen to episode 168. Episode 168. Well, listen to all of their episodes because it's a good podcast. But if you want to listen to me on the AR-15 podcast, I'm on episode 168. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Paul Carlson, thank you for saying that several months ago, because now I borrow that from him. Have fun, folks. I'll talk to you next week.